WMMC HD3 Detroit, KMPS HD3 Seattle, WBMX HD3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
This is Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston and some of the best co-hosts and fascinating topics of consciousness available. Shift Happens with channeler David Watson. Tracy McBurney's incredible energy consciousness. Mikael Mir's financial consciousness. And nuclear physicist Thomas Campbell with quantum physics and consciousness. It's an incredible mix of the best teachers on consciousness on every show. Call Intuitive Soul and Friends now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
We are here today with Grant Sisalu and Marvin Oka, and they are the boys from Australia, which it makes it a little bit difficult for them to be live, so we've pre-recorded this show. Their website is mbraining.com, and I don't know if you remember their last show, but I was mesmerized, but I thought it was so fascinating because they're taking all of our brains, which is not just the one that we think about, which is in our head, but the heart as well as the gut, and they're doing some very fascinating work. So I'm really excited to have them back on the show. Really excited that it's actually happening this time, because we did have a few problems with the time zone change and Australia then changing their time zone. So we're a little bit different timing now, but we're excited to have you guys back, and we're going to talk about highest expressions. So with that, Marvin, tell us about highest expressions.
Yeah, this is a fascinating discovery that we started to work with, and it began with Grant actually finding out a bit about, from the Tibetan Bon tradition, what people were, what they said would be, if you lived a great life, you would be basically living a great life if you were always living from states of compassion, creativity, and courage. And he sort of put this on a note, and it sort of vanished for a few years, but he sort of put it on a note. And one day he was doing some research for MBIT, and he was just rummaging through his notes, and he rediscovered this particular note that he made to himself from many years back. And it suddenly dawned on him that these related to the heart and the head and the gut neural networks, and that compassion was of the heart and creativity was of the head and courage was of the gut. And we started to explore this more in some further conversations, and we started to find, well, hang on, just wait a minute. These weren't just any old particular set of states or things that were just highly recommended in various wisdom traditions, because we hear states of compassion, for instance, highly suggested in many different types of wisdom traditions, as well as the value of courage, as well as the value of creativity. But we started to explore it a bit more, and then informed what we knew about from the neurosciences and what we knew from our behavioral modeling research, we sort of found, well, hang on, wait a minute. These states can only occur when a couple of things or several things come into play all at the same time. One, the person has to be in what's called an autonomically balanced or a coherent state. If some of your listeners were listening on our last show, but if they haven't, just a quick recap, mm-hmm. that you're actually working, your autonomic nervous system, it can be in two basic modes, or it's got two arms, is probably a better way of saying it, which is a sympathetic arm, which is the fight or flight syndrome, and it's a stimulus mode. And it's the mode when, if you're starting to get stressed, you're going too overly sympathetic from the autonomic nervous system. And there's the parasympathetic mode, which is the mode of relaxation or calm. But if you get too much, you get into too much lethargy and depression. So ideally, these two arms, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, need to be in balance with each other. And, fabulously enough, our body's incredibly wise, that it has a fantastic mechanism for balancing the sympathetic and parasympathetic arms, which is basically breathing. Deep diaphragmatic breathing balances the sympathetic and parasympathetic. When you inhale, it activates the sympathetic system. And when you exhale, it activates the parasympathetic system, which is why when people need to pump up, you'll find there's a huge emphasis on the way they inhale. They breathe in to get ready. And when they're stressed out and they need to relax, there's a big exhale or usually a sigh or something of that nature. And that's why many, if not all, wisdom traditions emphasize some aspect of breathing in all of their practices, because it allows them to actually get an autonomically balanced state. And from there, you can tap into a lot of your intuitive signals coming from your head, heart, and gut neural intelligences. And we start to find from this autonomic state, we have not only just, you know, wonderfully balanced states, but now we can access states of things like compassion, creativity, and courage. And when we do, we find that something else occurs, that a more natural expression of who you are, a more authentic way of being, starts to emerge from these three particular states. So, I mean, there's a lot we can talk about on this, but that's a fast overview a fast general introduction to these high, what we call highest expressions, the expressions of a more authentic self.
Okay. Okay, so the head is creativity, the highest. The heart is compassion, and the gut is courage?
Yeah, when we look at, again, in case there's any listeners that weren't in on our last show, the prime functions of these different neural networks, your head neural network has certain key skills or key competencies, as we might call them, or key functions, as does your heart. Your heart is a thinking brain unto itself. It stores memory. It can access a memory. It can learn. It can adapt. And it has certain functions that it's particularly good at. And your gut brain is similar. It's a neural network. It learns. It stores memory. It can learn. It can adapt. And it has its own prime functions or specific skill sets that it's after. The heart is particularly, well, let's back up a little bit. Everyone knows about the head. The head's good at things like cognitive perception. It perceives things. It thinks. It has thinking processes. And it's really good at making meaning. It comes up with language. It creates narrative and stories about the world to make meaning of the world. The heart, your heart intelligence, your heart brain, is particularly good at working your emotional processes, core values, key values that are important to you, as well as what we call relational affect, or how you feel about other people, how you feel about a relationship with other people. And your gut is particularly good at core identity, who you really are, as well as protection and safety issues, as well as mobilization. Here we have the gut instinct or the courage or the will to act. All comes with the gut intelligence. And so when these prime functions are functioning at their best, when you're not overly stressed out, overly sympathetic, or you're not overly apathetic or overly parasympathetic, but you're in a nice balanced state or what's called a coherent state, you now have access to states of high-order virtues, what we show in wisdom traditions as virtues, things like compassion, creativity, courage, compassion of the heart. Compassion has to do with connection with people and a desire, a wanting to do something for other people, to relieve their suffering, because there's a oneness, there's a connection with other people. And your head is particularly good at creativity. It can create things. It can create new ideas, new thoughts, new options. And your gut is particularly good at courage, being able to rise up against fear and to actually act in the face of fear, to take action. And these three highest expressions work together so that courage is fueled by highest values based on compassion, your capacity to connect with people, to have creativity that's based on responding to the world, to make the world better for other people, as well as for yourself, compassion for yourself as well. But it starts with compassion. So the highest expressions, yes, the heart is correlated to high states of compassion. When the head is working in its optimal state, we'll start to see forms of creativity. And when your gut's in an optimal state, we see forms of courage, your capacity to face up against status quo or against even your own conditioning and to actually actualize your own way of being that's more true to yourself.
Nice. Okay. So how are they integrative?
Now this is a great conversation that Grant and I had late one night. Grant and I have many of these late night conversations. We're both night owls.
Good for you.
Yeah, so this interview worked well. It's basically midnight for us at the moment. Mm-hmm. In one of our late night conversations, we started to explore the highest expressions, and there were several very unique characteristics about why they were the highest expressions. What's so special about these particular states? Why do we see in so many wisdom traditions, for instance, so much references to compassion as a way of being and as a way of orienting yourself to the world and to others? And why is there the whole notion of creativity? And we see it in practically every form of religion or of some sort of spiritual approach, there is some some story around Genesis, some story around the origin of things, some story around creation, around creativity. And then we also see why is courage so inspirational and so revered by so many people. When we hear stories of great courage or people who have rise up against all the different odds, why is that so inspiring to us? Why does it speak so archetypally to us? And we started finding, well, not only did these require states of autonomic coherence, where you had to be in an optimum state of being to even begin with, but they were also very naturally integrative. So, for instance, with compassion, what are the evidences of compassion? If you look at the neurolinguistics, if you look at the way people reference the words compassion and how they say that, you know, or how they articulate when they can see compassionate or not, it's often defined by compassionate acts. We start to see that, well, compassion is different from just sympathy or empathy. You can just feel for another person, but we don't really know if they're really compassionate until you see an act of compassion. And that's a gut-brain response. The gut actually has to act. But there's also a difference between dumb compassion and smart compassion. So, for instance, if you were compassionate with someone who was always in trouble and all you did was constantly give them a handout, or you had a welfare type of mindset and you just kept helping them, you're actually not helping them, because you're not helping them to learn how to overcome their own situations. And so all you're doing is, by rescuing a lot, you can often disempower someone. So this now requires the head to come in and say, what's a creative approach to compassion? How do I express my compassion in a way that works for the person over time, across context, for their own developmental needs? And now I need the courage to actually act and actually do something to manifest that compassion into the world by physical action. Similar with creativity. Creativity, we're not talking about just lateral thinking or innovation with creativity. Real creativity is the art of manifesting something into the world. If we don't see something actually created in the world, nothing's creative. That was just fantasy. You're just coming up with, you know, wild ideas. But if nothing comes up in the world, nothing was actually created. And that requires the gut brain to come into play. But creativity from a form of highest expression means the person is expressing their creativity in a way that is not just lateral, it's not just innovative, but in a way that makes a difference, a meaningful difference to others in the world. And that's not by luck and that's not by chance. That's because they feel connected to people. And we see this in forms of great leadership. With great leadership, people have creative visions of what could be possible. And they do that because they have compassion. They're connected to the people that they serve. And courage as well. Courage needs to come into play. You can be courageous, but you can be dumb courage as well. That's, you know, impulsive and foolish. But courage that is creative, courage that actually can make a difference in the world because it's compassionate, it's connected to people, now we see inspirational courage. And we find that people who are fully expressed, people who love being who they are and are expressing themselves in the world and making a difference, they're coming from these highest expressions. And we see it in all forms of true, authentic leadership.
Nice. Okay, well, I mean, it's really interesting how you've combined them all together. And I mean, I can really see the compassionate one, because I know that often, you know, a lot of people like to do the whole rescue thing. So, and I think a lot of people do the rescue thing very well, because for whatever reason, I think a lot of us are fixated on people liking us instead of, you know, being true to ourselves or being authentic. So yeah, we do things from that place a lot of the time. So I can see where, you know, coming up with a creative way to be compassionate that's not the rescue, and then having the actual courage to follow through makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and certainly. And sometimes compassion means the real action is to not do something.
Sure.
You know, in a classic example, if you're raising children, for instance, and they are in, perhaps they're a little bit older, where you know they're not going to do anything that could physically harm them, so you have to intervene very quickly. But if they're older, say they're in their early to late teens, sometimes you know that they're not. You can advise them and you can coach them as much as you can, but sometimes they just have to learn from their own mistakes. And as long as it's not a mistake that's going to jeopardize their health and well-being, It's not going to kill them or hurt them in a particular way. Sometimes you've got to give them the freedom to just let them do what they need to do so they can learn from experience. And sometimes, therefore, the compassionate thing to do is say, let me not rescue. Let me actually not do anything right now. Let's let them have an experience, and then let's help them with the learning that comes afterwards.
Right. We got to go to our first break. You're listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends. I have Grant Susilu, who's being very little quiet today because he's recovering from a flu, and Marvin Oka, and they are from mbraining.com. So if you want more information on them, they've also written a book called mbraining. So find out more about them on the web at mbraining.com. And we are on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
On the web now. Log on.
NewSkyRadio.com. The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
And welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends, and we have Grant Susilu today and Marvin Oka from mbraining.com. And we've been talking about highest expressions in whether we're looking at our heart, our head, or our gut brains, which I think is really fascinating. Apparently, Grant has some new research that he wants to talk about. So, Grant.
Yeah, Laurie, there's some interesting research I came across just yesterday from Professor Dan Ariely at Duke University, and he's been doing work on looking at how people do honesty and cheating in various interactions they do, especially in terms of economic interactions. And what he found was that creativity is highly correlated with cheating. So the more creative someone is, or if they are primed to be creative and to do creative activity, so their mind is in a creative state, then it increases the likelihood that they'll cheat and steal. And that's a perfect... Yeah, isn't that fascinating?
So that's not the highest expression then.
No, so that's a perfect example of creativity operating by itself.
By itself.
By itself alone. So all I did was prime creativity, and it led to people cheating more.
Wow.
And this was right across the board. So this was, you know, not just specific people, but generally everybody in the studies and the, you know, reasonably large studies, with the amount of cheating increased. And he calls it the fudge factor, the sort of the factor that we all like to think we're honest, but we have this sort of room for movement. And you can just increase that because the room for movement of thinking you're honest, but doing a slightly dishonest activity, a slight amount of cheating, if you can find a creative way, the more creative you are, the more ways you have got to rationalize what you've just done as not being completely dishonest. And you know, he's got a lot of research to back that kind of take on it up. And it really fits with what we've been finding, because what we're saying is that there's a sequence that really counts, and it is that you have to come from compassion in the heart first. In MBIT, in this multiple brain integration work that we've been doing, we have a saying that says the heart leads. And it's a simple way to understand the importance of the heart and coming from the heart first. So if you come from compassion first, and that's integrative with the creativity, then it puts you in a very different creative space, a very different creative state, because now you're creating to add value to others, creating to connect with others in a way that will add to their life and remove suffering. So, of course, you're not going to be likely to be cheating and taking advantage of others from that space. Creativity alone can very much be a negative trait, but as a highest expression, it only truly expresses highly when it's integrated with compassion. And, of course, then with courage to actually take action in the world, because otherwise it's just a set of great ideas.
Right. Wow, it's fascinating. But that's why I like the fact that we kind of are on track about having to go into the heart first, because I think that is definitely the key, where most people, you know, on this planet sort of lead from their head.
Yeah, yeah, especially in the Western world and because of... Of the last couple of thousand years of, you know, falling in love with what Edward de Bono calls the Gang of Three, of Plato and Aristotle, and you know, these Greek philosophies that led to great science knowledge over the last 2,000 years, and great technologies, given us incredible lifestyles and the ability to do recordings like we're doing from across the planet. It's brilliant. We don't knock the head base, you know, what the head's done for us over the last couple of thousand years. But in the last, you know, certainly in the last couple of hundred years, I think we've really elevated the head and thrown away the wisdom of the heart and gut. And that's the message of M-Braining, is that there's neuroscience now to back up and lots of research evidence across multiple domains to show that we really need to bring back the intelligence of the heart and gut brains, that they are brains, and that it's important, and they actually have these highest expressions that make a difference. And when you come from a way of being, when you wake up each morning and you say, how can I do the most compassionate, creative, courageous me today? And in every situation, when you bring this sense of compassion first from the heart, your heart leading, to alleviate suffering both in your own life and the lives of others, to value yourself and your life on this planet and the value of the other people around you, and to really make a difference. And then you do that in the most creative way you can, and then kick into that gutsy action to actually to step up to the plate, to have the motivation. It makes a difference. It just amazingly shifts your life in ways that words can't express.
Right.
So I think you're right. The heart's so important. And we need to bring it back. The head's got its place, but it needs to be subsumed to the heart first.
It's interesting, as you're talking about the gut and courage. I mean, a lot of people in the spiritual spiritual realms, you know, think that, you know, if it's something, it's too hard, you know, if you're really doing it properly, it will just happen and it will come to you. And so there is a definite disconnect from creating action. And of course, there's also the doing versus being, or the being versus doing, which is where we get kind of caught up as well. But being, of course, is an action, and probably takes a lot of courage to come from a place of being instead of always looking outside of ourselves. But that piece about the courage is probably pretty important.
Oh, it's vitally important. Some of the work by David Hawkins on his work of Power versus Force, and he has a map of consciousness, and he makes a very clear point that says until your consciousness can reach a level where something like courage is accessible, is now available to you, until then, you have no choice. There's no freedom of choice, because without courage, you're going to succumb to your own conditioning. You know, you'll capitulate to your own conditioning. And it requires courage to actually express a real, authentic self. And until then, you really don't have a choice.
Yeah. So, okay. So we've got a good example of people coming from the heart first. But so let's say we have this great idea that's very creative. How do we bring it into the heart and into the gut?
Okay, that's a different angle or a different order. Yeah.
But that's how people think, right? First they
Exactly. You know, and that's a different mode. That's about doing, and that can be and there's nothing wrong with that. There can be great things that come from that. Someone can actually come up with something really creative and it can do some great things in the world. When we talk about highest expressions, it's a different context. We're talking about, when we say highest expressions, first of all, what is it that's being expressed? And we're saying what's being expressed is an authentic self. But in our language, you know, self is a process. It's not a thing. So Grant and I often like to use the term, it's an authentic selfing. It's a verb, right? The way you're doing oneself. And you do it in a more authored, a way of authoring yourself, in a way that's more true to yourself. And so when you're at a highest expression, an expression of self, it needs to start with the heart. It needs to start with what's important to you, where your values are coming from, and your sense of connection to others. From there, go into creativity. How do you now express this what's important to you in terms of your core values and your connection to others in creative ways? How do you now actually make that manifest into the world? And that makes a huge difference as opposed to just coming up with just a great thought. Because we can come up with very creative ways to make new bombs, for instance. Yeah, but
or
that's completely
ways to play, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. But there's no. You know, the only way you could do that is to not start with any connection from the heart.
Right.
you'd have to start from a self protection. You know, the gut would have to be into a conditioned protective mode to say, okay, there's threat out there. I need to protect. And separate. You have to see yourself separate from others. And you know, when you actually look at what happens naturally for people, well, actually, no. What makes people come alive when they become their highest expression is when they're actually in states of connection with people, when they're communing with people. That is when you start to see people at their best. And so you know, we're coming at it from a very different context, as we say, than just innovation or creativity per se.
So what you're saying is most of the time, if the heart's not first, then we're likely coming from a place of fear. Versus love.
It doesn't have to be, but there's more likelihood that can happen. Yeah.
Right, because you want to
sequence makes a difference.
Fix.
Yes.
Yeah, you're wanting to change or fix something, so you're wanting to come. You're coming up with a creative idea because something's not working, or you want to change or fix or heal or something in that way, right? I guess
it can be that way. Yes, it doesn't have to be that way, but it's more likely than that. We find particularly with a lot of people in the Western world, when they have their head and gut kind of, for lack of better terms, cooperating with each other at the expense of the heart or not connecting with the heart first, we find often the gut can go into a fear-based protection mode, which causes the head to panic, or vice versa. The head can come in with a whole bunch of conditioned thoughts, which causes the gut to want to protect. And it creates a very different set of quality of decisions than as opposed to if you started from, yeah, but what's important to you? Then let's be creative.
And so that's why it's the highest expressions. Beautiful. You want to talk about bringing the human spirit alive, or is that kind of been...
No, it's very much related. So what happened, we find when people are operating from their highest expressions and in the most organic sequence that we found, which is it starts from the heart. The heart intelligence coming from states of compassion and core values then guides the head to become creative in its thoughts and its plans and its options. And from there, it gets revalued by the heart. And then the gut says, well, if that's what's important to us, then great, let's take action. And so that we're true to ourselves. When that sequence starts to occur, we find what's called an emergent property, which is the principle of emergence is something where you can't predict what's going to come in advance. It's emergent. It emerges. When things come together, a new quality or new characteristic starts to emerge. You see this when you're having a great conversation with someone maybe you've just met. You didn't know them before, but you get on, like as we say in Australia, you get on like a house on fire. Right? You just click, everything works well. And the conversation just takes on a life of its own. You know, the quality of the relationship just emerges because of the beautiful blending that starts to happen.
Can we put you on hold for just a sec so we can go on our next break? Sorry.
Sure.
we'll get back to that emerging aspect. You're listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends. We have Grant Susilu and Marvin Oka from mbraining.com. If you want more information, go to their website. They've written a book called mbraining, and that you can find more information on their site at mbraining.com. You're listening on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Enlighten, empower, enrich. This is CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries. CBS Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
And welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. Today we have Grant and Marvin from M-Braining, fascinating work that they're doing. They wrote a book called M-Braining. Highly recommend to understand more information of how our heart, mind, and gut work together. We're talking about right now, right before the break, bringing the human spirit alive with using our highest expressions. And I kind of interrupted Marvin while he was discussing this, so go back again. Sorry about emergence.
Yeah, not a problem. So the emergent property says things emerge when things come together. And when the highest expressions are in full play for someone, when they're coming from ways of being that are compassionate, creative, and courageous, a sense of self, a real authentic way of being starts to emerge. And this is where we find, it's for lack of better terms, we simply call it liberating the human spirit. People come alive. When we do our coaching certification, our coaching trainings, for instance, and we take people through the MBIT processes, the multiple brain integration technique processes, oftentimes they may start with a problem. They'll say, "Oh, I've got this problem. It's with my partner or with work, or I'm trying to balance work-life or my health or whatever it might be." And we ask them, okay, so if that's your issue, what is it you want? What's your outcome? What are you after? And they'll say whatever it is. And usually it's a reaction-based response at that point in time, because they're coming from a problem-driven consciousness. You know, they've got a problem, and from that way of knowing the world, knowing themselves, they say, this is what I want, which is a reaction to the problem. I want my problem fixed or solved or removed. However, when we take them through the embraining processes and we get them into states of highest expressions where they're now truly compassionate, and maybe it's a state of compassion with themselves, and they're highly creative, there's some ways of being that are creative about how to express what's important to them, what's true for them, for themselves or their lives or in relation to that particular issue. And they're coming from a way of being that is courageous enough to act on what's true for them. Often now, many times, what was the problem often vanishes. It's no longer a problem because it's now irrelevant from a different state of consciousness. Or many times, what they now want to do is not a fix, but it's now an expression of who they are. I mean, we've had people come in and, for instance, where they're saying, you know, I've got this issue with a work-based issue, and I'm just trying to achieve, you know, trying to get this work-based goal to happen. And I'm frustrated, and I don't know what to do, etc. And when we take them through the process and we say, well, great, so what comes up for you now after we're coming from these states of highest expressions? And they come up with some amazing things. I remember one person saying, well, it's actually, for them now, it's all about forgiveness. You know, there's a part of us going, what? A part of us going, I thought this was a business-based, you know, you were frustrated on a business task issue. And they realized it was about, for them, it was a forgiveness issue, because when they now let go of any of their own reactions to the people that were involved, they were now free. They were mentally, emotionally, spiritually free to just be themselves and express themselves in this world. And it's a completely different issue at that point. And this is where we call it emergent wisdom. It's a wisdom that arises. You can't predict it beforehand. It's not a solution, but what happens is a new order of consciousness arises, and from there, they relate to their life so very, very differently.
I could see that. It's fascinating because, you know, when I took NLP, NLP was really neuro-linguistic programming was really about how to help people achieve goals, like how to sort of use the other person that you're with and see how they're responding and get them. It's a very subtle manipulation, but to help yourself achieve certain things, get them on the same, you know, the same path and same understanding. And so, I mean, I can see how this has taken NLP to just extremely open and amazing places because it it's using a lot of their same information, but taking it to a much higher place.
Yeah, it's very different. As Dr. Wyatt Woods-Mall, who's recognized as one of the, for lack of better terms, the walking encyclopedia of NLP. He's just been around since the beginning, and he just knows everything there is about NLP. And he said that MBIT, Multiple Brain Integration Techniques, is the first real breakthrough he's seen in probably a good 20 years, 20, 25 years. And it, as I said, you know, as you rightfully said, a lot of NLP is very outcome-driven.
Yeah.
And hence why it's very effective in that domain, in that context. You know, if you want to achieve outcomes, NLP is an incredible technology to do it. One of the things we find is that, though, the outcome that often is wanted by someone is when they state what their outcome is or what they're after, it starts from a particular level of consciousness, right? And usually it's one in response to a problem.
Yeah.
Whereas if we start from a different place, if we start from what if it wasn't that problem? What if you were coming from what is the truest place you could be coming from you, a more authentic way of being for you? What do you really want to express at the highest level of self for yourself in the world? Now, how do you relate to what life is presenting you? And suddenly, things that were problems aren't problems anymore. Now they're often great opportunities. Or what was a problem now becomes irrelevant. It's just so small compared to what they really want to do in the world. And the wisdom, the emergent wisdom that now arises, is just quite tremendous. I remember once Grant and I were doing this training with someone, and he was very outcome focused. And we were talking about in NLP, we talk about working from a present stage to a desired outcome. And he said, what about the path in between, getting from the present to desired state? And I said to him, from an MBIT perspective, it's actually one of the least important parts. And he said, what? he said, to me, that's one of the most important parts. I said, well, no, just wait. Wait till you see what MBIT does, because you'll start to find, why would you bother working on a path when the goal can dramatically change? What you're after will dramatically change. Don't spend a lot of time on the path before you first get to the consciousness about, well, what do you really want for yourself? You know, because when you're not coming from reaction, how do I fix or how do I solve my problems? But instead, you're coming from highest expression. How do I want to be in the world? What do I really want to manifest in the world that's an expression of my deepest sense of self? Suddenly, you could have spent a lot of time on a path that would have taken you nowhere, you know. But now that you start from a highest expression, well, it's a completely different game.
Yeah, it's an amazing. It's subtle, but yet it takes you to, you know, all of the wisdom teachings that everybody is sort of helping us try and understand. But it takes you from It gives you a concrete way to sort of start looking at it instead of getting caught up, because we get caught up in all the things that we want to change and fix. So, you know, from that place, it's a wonderful idea to, you know, try and find the highest expression you want to be. And, you know, it's funny, I keep coming up with something and then not being able to necessarily hold that vision, but, you know, and then rediscover it again, you know, not too much longer later, and go, okay, yeah, that's what I want to be. That's the expression I want to be. And it's kind of a process, I think, but
and that's why it requires the integration of all three,
right.
And why for us, you know, things like compassion, creativity, and courage, these are ways of being. These are ontological. These are the field of ontology studies ways of being, and these are not emotional states. We're not talking about an emotional state of compassion, or just having a fleeting moment of creativity, or having an emotional state of courage, because emotions come and go. how many emotions do we go through in a particular day? But ways of being are very different. To be coming from a place where it's a compassionate way of being, where your neural networks have created these patterns as a core sense of who you are. And this is why we talk a lot about in embraining and MBIT that integration is a real function of the gut neural network or the gut brain. It's the gut that actually is responsible for your core identity. And unless all three are involved, unless what's important to you in your heart is there and the creative aspects of your head are being directionalized properly, and unless it's all integrated into your gut, so your gut says, yes, this is who I am, then, yeah, you're left with just these emotional comings and goings where, gee, you know, your heart goes, I'd like to, right? The emotional state says, I'd like to be this way, or I'd like to live my life this way. But then when the emotion changes, well, we're back to status quo, because none of it has actually upgraded. The heart neural network really hasn't functioned in the way of being. The head hasn't as well, and the gut hasn't brought it all together for the self. So that's why the sequence is so important.
I can see where it would be an amazing process to go through. I can acknowledge how that must be enlightening for a lot of people, as well as yourselves going through it with the people. I mean, it sounds fascinating. We'll have to try doing a process at one point.
Yeah,
because that would be very interesting to see how that all sort of unfolds. Why don't we take our last break? When we come back, maybe we can look at some examples of things that have happened. I know you have a story that you'd like to share. So you're listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends. We have Grant Susilu and Marvin Oka with us. They've written a book, and their website is from the same. It's called M-Braining, and it sounds like they have a process called multiple brain integration technique that allows us to move from our heart to our mind and our gut in a way that allows us to have our highest expressions. If you want more information, check out their website, mbraining.com, and you're on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
Life's a game. Win. Call and get advice from today's top coaches that are here to help you run a business, offer legal advice, enrich your relationships, or guide you on the right career path. Our coaches are expert professionals in their field to help you win the game of life. Listen to Coach Me Radio, Monday through Friday at 5 p.m.
Oh, darling. No.
Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
And welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. We have Grant and Marvin from mbrading.com. We've been talking a lot about highest expressions, and we're going to share some examples, or at least one example, if not more, of how, I guess, our intuition kind of gets kicked into a higher place and through our higher expressions. So why don't we start with that example? I think Grant's going to start this.
That's right. And the reason I'm going to start and I may not finish is because I'm having terrible coughing fits from this flu. So Marvin may have to step in here and save the day for me. So I apologize to the listeners for the croaky voice. One of the things I did want to jump in and say was how from highest expression and from coming from that coherent mode that highest expression needs, that you can't do compassion unless you're in that state of calm balance between the autonomic mode of sympathetic and parasympathetic that Marvin was talking about much earlier. And from these highest expressions, you actually get a different quality of intuitions from the intelligences in your heart and your gut and your head. And there's a lot of work in the field of intuition and research on intuition that shows that, you know, if you're in a very fearful state, then you get a very different quality of intuition than when you're in a coherent state. We had this one example that was absolutely amazing, and it's... what happened in one of the workshops is I still can't quite explain from a scientific perspective. And remember, you know, I come from a physics and science background. So physics was my initial degrees was in physics. And so I tried to have everything as much as possible amenable to being explained by science. But this one is completely unexplainable and quite incredible in terms of the intuitions that were revealed by this particular example. But in our workshops, one of the things we do is we get participants as part of a home play exercise to speak to their heart and gut brains before they go to sleep to ask for important intuitive messages that would be the, you know, highest expression of who they are and that they really need to hear, that would really help them to become more of who they really, you know, authentically are in life. So to talk to their brains and then go to sleep. And when they wake up, to note the dreams, because one of the things that's been found is that during the processes of sleep and dreaming, when the head brain is going through what's called REM, or rapid eye movement sleep, which is when we do our dreaming, and it happens typically about every 90 minutes during the night, we go through a period of REM sleep, REM sleep. And during that time, the gut brain goes through what's called rapid gut movement sleep, or RGM sleep, and it does exactly the same sort of thing that the head brain is doing. Instead of the eyes twitching, the gut is all twitching. And the researchers believe that this is a time when the gut brain is communicating with the head brain. You're integrating, and sort of you could almost imagine digesting the day. So you're really getting deeply in touch with the intuitive messages between the head, heart, and gut, and trying to make sense of what's happened during your day. And so sleeping and dreaming and visions are important ways in which the heart and gut communicate to the head. So we gave the exercise to the group, and next morning participants came and we debriefed on anyone who had some amazing dreams. And one lady came out to the front of the room and said, I need to share with you a story about the dream. I woke up in the very early hours of the morning dreaming about standing in front of a refrigerator. And immediately when I heard her say that, I'm thinking, well, what's inside a refrigerator? Food. And, you know, where would you typically stand if you're about to go and make a meal, etc.? Would be, you know, you'd go to the refrigerator and think, oh, what am I going to get the food out of here? And to me, that would be, you know, symbolically, I could almost imagine what was coming next in this dream was going to be a message from the gut, right? From the gut brain. because obviously food was involved. But she said she was standing in front of this fridge and she was looking at a drawing on a piece of paper on the fridge door, you know, which often people, I know, we've got some you know, my nephews and nieces' pictures up on magnets up on the fridge door, so it's a fairly common thing. And there was a woman standing behind her and a young boy standing behind the woman, poking her in the back, pushing her in the back. And she woke up with this message saying, this drawing is important. You need to pay attention to this drawing. And she thought to herself, I can't draw. Well, I don't know what this dream's all about, but I can't draw. And she said she sort of felt a bit of stress about the fact that she knew that, you know, there was home play exercise, but remember your dreams. And yet she really, she had this crazy dream of, you know, standing in front of a fridge, a guy poking someone in the back and pay attention to the thing. So she ultimately, to cut the long story short, she decided that she would go and see if she could draw this drawing that she remembered from the dream. And she got some texture colours, and just as it so happened, she never had texture colours, but she found these ones that were exactly the colours from her dream. Mm. And they'd been given to her by a client, because she's a coach. And so she sat down and tried to do a drawing, and she held it up to the class. And my goodness, for a person who couldn't draw, I was blown away. I thought, if I could draw that well, I'd be impressed. It was incredible for such a drawing with texture colours. And she said, so she had this drawing. Now she sort of felt, wow, this is really cool. She's got something to bring and show the class. And this is a message from her dream. Didn't know what it meant, but so by this time she thought, well, there's no point going back to bed. So she thought, I might as well go and, you know, check my emails before I come off to the course in the morning. So she powered up her computer, logged in, and it turned out that there was a client that she'd had. It's one of her first clients. She'd worked with him over in, when she was over in the US, and he subsequently moved to Canada. She's moved back to Australia. So this guy, one of the things she'd worked with for him was helping him to become more creative, because he felt he lacked creativity. And one of the things she suggested was he should go and do drawing classes. And he'd previously been working in black and white. And about a year ago, she'd suggested, you know, that he start moving into colour. And he'd been working and learning how to paint and draw in colours. And he'd done his first final completion of a painting, of a drawing that he was really happy to share. And he had emailed that to her while she was sleeping. So during the time she was sleeping, it was a day over in Canada, he'd finished this thing, scanned it, and emailed it to her, and she held it up to the class. And it was the mirror image of the one she'd drawn.
Wow.
Yeah, incredible. It was just like, there was a lake, and there was a lake. There was a boat on the side of the lake, there was a boat. There was this weird sort of tower shape. There were these two trees with exactly the same, you know, sort of relational dimensions. There was a little rope hanging off the front of the rope, the boat, of a certain sort of shape and size. Everything was like, but just mirror imaged.
Huh.
And you held them side by side. And it was kind of spooky. And she said, I can't explain this. I don't know how I could have known to draw this when, you know, I hadn't seen this email. It only came in while I was asleep. So, yeah, actually she got permission from the gentleman who did the painting, and she scanned the drawing in and she typed out the case study for me, and I'm going to actually put that up on my blog, which I'll put a link from the website to. And so if any of your listeners want to go and have a look at these two drawings, it's quite incredible the sort of messages that come from your heart and your gut brains when you speak to them through highest expression. The quality of intuitions and the messages you can get transcend the, you know, explanation of science even.
Wow, that's fascinating. It obviously had a lot of meaning to her client. Did it end up meaning anything to her as well? Like, was it something that was...
What she got out of it was the importance to start trusting messages from her heart.
There you go.
This was something that she said she lived very head-based. You know, she was very, like myself, very science-oriented. And so
it helped her see.
You know, this was, she had gone to bed asking her heart and gut to give her a message that was important for her to express herself, you know, the highest expression of herself. And what it pulled from the ether was, here's some information your head could never know, but we know. It transcends space and time, and you can listen to us. We have powerful messages for you.
That's amazing. then she also trusted herself to actually make the picture, which is, it's just,
yeah, for somebody who said she couldn't draw.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, I still get goosebumps thinking about it.
So. Yeah, I imagine. All right, well, we have to end the show. What a great show. I loved it, talking about highest expressions. If you want more information about Grant Cicilu or Marvin Oka, go to their website, mbraining.com, and find out what the fascinating work they're doing. They wrote a book. You might want to get a hold of that to understand it at a deeper level. This is just fascinating. I love having you guys. Your next show will be May 8th, so stay tuned, and I'm looking forward to it. You're listening to Sky Radio, powered by CBS.